Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 156 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Eric Count Basie Walquist, and joining me this week, as he does each and every week, is the other host of the show. His name is...
I am Jesse, your sun and your stars, Wilson.
Great.
I accidentally did your moon, which is the female version. Oops.
Well.
Freudian slip there.
Yep.
The old Dothraki tongue,
This is a very special episode of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, where Jesse explores parts of himself that he didn't realize were there. Starting off...
physically and emotionally.
Yeah. Jesse, how was your week?
Good. Went camping this weekend.
Yeah, you're a camping fool, man.
I know. I'm trying to get 5 trips before the end of summer.
Mm.
Which, a Washington summer is a pretty narrow window.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Are you talking, like, till the end of September?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Until it gets too cold to realistically go camping.
Well, it's getting there. Today it started clouding up.
Yeah, actually, here in Port Townsend, the fog did not rise at all today. It was spooky.
Oh.
It's like very autumnal.
It's like a Stephen King novel.
Yeah, and there are a bunch of spider webs on the forklift this morning with, like, dew droplets on them. It was kind of spooky.
Wow, that
like
is spooky.
A haunted forklift.
That is the thing about Seattle summer is, like, spiders, man.
Yeah, spider city.
Spiders everywhere. I had a pretty good week as well. My softball team is in the playoffs, and we won our first game.
Jeez, congratulations.
Literally.
You really turned this team around, Eric.
I know, what can I say? I'm like Emilio Estevez. But the thing is, like, I have never been on a winning team ever. Like, when I was in school, I played basketball. I was on a baseball team. Never, ever on a winning team. Never been to the playoffs in my whole life, let alone win a playoff game. So
you went to, you went to state for Knowledge Bowl.
That's true. I went to state twice for Knowledge Bowl, sir. But I don't really count that as a sport. I'm talking about physicality, bro.
Okay.
But probably the best part about this softball team is that Lydia and I found a game couple that we can play games with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we met up last week, we played some board games, and then they were like, hey, Eric, do you have Puerto Rico? Or do you know
and
how to play
like,
that?
Do I?
They're like, oh, I bought that, and I don't know how to play it. I'm like, holy crap.
Nice.
You guys are perfect.
Yeah.
Never change.
That's hard. Yeah. It's hard to find that.
It is. Like, these
when
people...
When you enter the stage of your life... And
yeah.
You just kind of meet people, but it's weird to, like, it's easier to ask a girl out on a date than to, like, ask to hang out with someone as a friend.
Especially in Seattle. Like, this is, like, a known stigma of the city is that people, like, really cocoon. And they, like, get in their little groups and they do not meet other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, get on the internet and then join a softball team for people you meet on the internet. And then all of a sudden you know more people.
Actually, last Thursday I went to... a guy's house and played board games with 3 complete strangers and had a blast.
There you go, man. But board games make the heart grow stronger.
Yeah. Play Pandemic, which I've decided I don't like.
I hate that game. I've never liked it.
Yeah, I gave it another shot, and I just don't like it. I don't find it fun. I played.
Yeah.
We played like a 3-player game of Settlers of Catan before the 4th guy showed up.
Yep.
I loved it. One, I smoked him.
Uh-huh.
And that makes me have more fun. But two, I just like competitive games. I mean, I'll play Arkham Horror because that's like its own beast.
Right.
I almost don't consider that a co-op. That's almost like, I don't know. You're kind of doing your own thing in the world together, but...
Well, that's what you want in a co-op, though. That's why I like Flashpoint so much, is that you don't really have time to worry about other people's shit. In Pandemic, it's so easy for somebody to just, like, take over the game and say, you're doing that, you're doing that, you're doing that. This is what you do. This is how we win the game.
The board game quarterback, as it were.
Exactly. You want a game, you want a board game where you can make your own decisions, but you're also not playing competitively against the other people. And the thing I love about Arkham Horror, and also to a certain extent in Flashpoint, is that you do something and all of a sudden it's really heroic.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
And people, like, cheer you on.
Yeah, you pull out something that you probably shouldn't have pulled out, and then all of a sudden you're the hero.
Yeah, that said, I still like me a competitive game.
Yeah, totally. I'm there, but that's what Magic's for me.
Mm. See, also, I got Agricola. Agricola is almost like you're playing this. It's similar in that you're playing the same game and your interaction with the other person isn't necessarily direct.
Yep.
But there's still a winner when the dust settles.
Yeah, the thing about Agricola is that it gets less fun the more you're playing against experienced players. And I guess that's probably the thing about any
unlike Magic.
Game. Yeah. Well, there's a thing, you know, I listened to the Mark Rosewater podcast. He's like the guy who makes Magic. He's the director of all the cards and stuff. Anyway.
Is that the Drive to Work podcast?
Yeah, the Drive to Work podcast. He talks about, like, when you're designing a game, you need to figure out how often an inexperienced player can beat an experienced player. Because right. if you're in a game situation where the experienced player will always beat the inexperienced player, then it's really not a lot of fun.
You think Magic isn't that?
I think Magic is a game where you can, if you're in like a draft format or even a constructed format, a limited constructed format, you can still pull out a victory. At least you can at least win one game against another guy. There's still the luck of the cards there.
I don't know, man. Like, when I play against real seasoned vets who've like been playing mm-hmm. since the original set and never stopped, like, yeah. there's no winning for me.
Yeah, but you're still not going to lose 100% of the games.
Yeah,
if it's
that's
a straight-up
a
limited format. Like, I can understand if they've constructed this crazy deck that they know how to play with. That's a different story. But if it's
well,
a limited format.
Well, no, I mean,
format,
even in limited formats, they're going to win 90% of the games.
Yeah, exactly. And that's for a lot, some games, that's a good ratio, is 9 out of 10. But in other games, like, I feel like Agricola, you have like an extremely severe advantage if you're an experienced player.
I feel like in Agricola, the learning curve is such that if you suffer through two defeats, your third game, you have a really good chance of winning.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just a lot of moving parts. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Like, we love Arkham Horror, so that's like the most moving parts of any game. But
except perhaps Magic.
Yeah. There are a lot of moving parts, but yeah, Agricola, I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. I'm just excited. Oh, also, I got this game Smash Up, which I really enjoy. It's a good light card game that is pretty fun to play, but it can get a little bogged down in the middle. But the beginning's fun and the ending's fun. I think the ending makes up for the middle.
Mm.
Regardless, let's do some listener feedback. But before we do, Jesse, quickly, what are you drinking this week?
I'm just finishing up a glass of Flemish Kiss by the Commons,
uh-huh.
which was briefly holding my number one beer of all time slot, but I feel like this batch is not quite as good. It's a little more estery, and it has that kind of, like, Belgian yeast can kind of have a characteristic, like, bananas and bubblegum flavor.
Yeah, totally.
And it's coming through really strong in this batch, but still loving it. World-class beer, for sure.
Excellent. I'm drinking the Audible Ale this week from Red Hook. I know you think this one's too sweet, but I love it. Goes down easy.
Yeah, dude, that beer is just not for me. I don't know what it is.
I like it. It's a little, you know, it's nice 4.7, so it'll get you cooking, and it tastes, I like the taste.
I had a beer today on draft, the Berliner Weiss by The Brewery out of, I think they're out of California or Oregon. Oh, man, it was tits on ice. It was so good. And it was like a 3.7, super dry, super tart.
Yeah.
And just yummy, yummy.
Excellent. Who should we dedicate this podcast to?
I have a dedication.
Who?
To my favorite Seahawk.
Oh, no.
Pro Bowl veteran.
Yep.
I say Ring of Honor nominee in my heart.
Future Ring of Honor member.
Number 33, who I'm betting Pete Carroll wish was on the roster right now, Leon Washington.
Return some kicks, maybe.
Yeah, maybe to return some kicks, because our pretty boy Percy Harvin, double agent, is out for the season.
The $63 million man. He said he's out for a sizable amount of playing time.
They say 3 to 4 months, but I mean, that's...
He could be back for the playoffs.
If we make it without Liwa.
That is a great scenario. I think that the team is talented enough. The team is basically the same team that they had last year.
You got Chris Clemens on injured reserve, Zach Miller... Sidney Rice is getting some experimental procedure done on his knee in Switzerland right now.
He's always injured, though. Is Zach Miller on injured reserve?
Yeah, he is.
So he's out for the season?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure what injured reserve means, but
injured reserve means you're out for the season. They put you on injured reserve and you can't play anymore.
He's just not. He's not able to practice. Okay. So I'm not sure what his.
It's still early. If the Seahawks make the playoffs and then you throw a Percy Harvin in the mix for the playoffs, that's a great mix because then people can't adjust to that. Because
it's great to shake up your team.
Shake it up.
Right during playoffs.
It is.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Hey, man.
I feel like the Minnesota Vikings knew exactly what they're doing. We're playing them this year. They stuck us with a lemon. And like as I like to say, free agents are double agents.
Well, what are
they
you
got do? Us. They burned us with the sneaky characteristic Viking tactics.
We have the Vikings are basically the Seahawks now. We have their offensive coordinator, Sidney Rice, Percy Harvin. And we have Tavares Jackson as well. So the Vikings of a few years ago are now the Seahawks.
Was Jackson a Viking?
Oh yeah. He took over after Brett Favre, but he was on that team that went to the NFC Championship game against the Saints.
I didn't know that.
There you go. Well, now you know. All right, let's get to some listener feedback this week. Got a call from Maine, so you know who that is. It's time for some Jesse Parigo.
It's not a little plumber.
Uh-uh.
Hey, guys, what's going on? It's Josh from Maine checking in. So last week I misquoted Teddy Roosevelt. I had a lot of allergy meds and cold meds in me, so when I get like that, I have a tendency to misquote people. Anyway, so a couple weeks ago, I talked about fantasy football and said that I was going to draft Drew Brees in my league with my buddies, and you guys questioned that. Well, we have a two-quarterback league where you can start two, and our point structure is so pretty much makes it so the quarterbacks are the highest scoring players, so that's why I'm going to go with two quarterbacks. But I love how different leagues are different, and you have to use different strategies. So pretty much I'm looking forward to this 18-team league. I think it's going to be pretty challenging, but it's going to be fun. So my main topic here, and this is something that I was thinking about when I was reading about a remake of one of my favorite movies of all time, Logan's Run. It's going to be written, I think it's probably the screenplay, is going to be done by the guy who did Bioshock. And I was thinking that's pretty cool. I started to think about, does that really need to be redone?
Sorry.
What can they do to make it better? Pretty much the story is going to stay the same, but what really, really draws me to that movie is that mid to late 70s kind of sci-fi futuristic feel with the costumes and the sets and stuff like that, and that's really what draws me to it. It's what I remember. It got me thinking about, is there a movie, a game, or a TV show that a remake would really make it a whole lot better? And I'm not just talking about special effects. I mean, could you have something that you could really kind of improve on the story with different actors, with the special effects, with CGI, and not just make it into Transformers. So I couldn't think of any movies that really could be made better because the classics are classics because of the story. And when you get into really hopping them up with CGI stuff, it really kind of takes away. But I was thinking about ALF, the show that was on in the 80s. I really think that you could redo ALF.
That was a masterpiece.
And it could be funny, and it could be cool. Anyway, guys, it's just my thought. I'd love to hear what you guys think about remakes. Anyway, I'm looking forward to fantasy football. I'm a little bummed you guys aren't going to the beer, board game, and babes format, but that's your choice. Anyway, stay arrogant and get off my back.
Get off my Scott Bakula, Josh.
Get off my backs.
First of all, babes format, the jury's still out on that.
Who's the hot babe of the week, Eric?
the other stuff. First of all, Fantasy Football League, guys, get excited. This podcast is getting released on Thursday. Friday at noon Pacific time, we will be releasing the link to our Fantasy Football League on Facebook, on our Facebook page, Personal Arrogance on Facebook. We will be releasing the link. There are only 14 slots available because it's an 18-team league. You've got Jesse. You've got me. Plus, you've got Jim Jones and Aaron all on this league. So get excited, guys. It's going to be a crazy format. It's 7 players starting, 3 reserve, no injured reserve. It's going to be a really, really fun league. I think there's going to be a lot of trades. I think there's going to be a lot of cool stuff going on. So get excited about that. Friday at noon Pacific time, we will be releasing the link. So get in while you can. First come, first serve. Second of all, remakes, man. Any remakes come to mind for you?
There's actually a show that I used to watch on the History Channel after school that I really, really liked. And I think you could make like a really cool, gritty HBO miniseries based off of it. And this show was called The Black Sheep Squadron. Have you ever heard about this?
No.
It's a true, true story of a Tacoma boy who actually was a man by the time anything interesting starts happening. But he's a UW grad, actually. And he was a Army, not Army, a Marine pilot in the Pacific during World War II. And basically what they did is, like, when there were other pilots from different detachments or whatever that were acting up and having disciplinary problems, they would send them over to him because he was pretty good at getting these, you know, young, hotshot, hot-headed Marine pilots and getting them actually working together as a team. And a lot of them became, like, combat aces and really distinguished pilots, and I think you could make a pretty cool, like, 8-part miniseries based on that.
Yeah, that sounds cool. So that's just
and the thing is,
that's just real, right? That's just a documentary.
Well, no, they made a TV show about it.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like a drama.
Oh,
yeah, and it was all in. It was like all in black and white. It was an old show. I think they made it in like the 50s or 60s.
Oh.
I looked this up, but so like their combat scenes were all done with like. It'd be great because it'd be like it'd be shot with whatever was the current camera of the time, all the, you know, narration and stuff, and then like the planes taking off, and then for the actual combat scenes, it would like transition to like these gritty, you know, jarry kind of things that was like actual combat footage from the day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it was like real stuff. It looked really bad because like suddenly you're like totally.
Right.
Whipped out of it, like, oh, okay, now I'm just watching an actual, like, Zero get shot down.
These effects look real. That,
yeah,
that dead guy
part,
looks
like,
so real.
It is weird to just be, like, watching the show and, like, being all into it and then be like, I'm pretty sure I just watched a guy burn to death in a cockpit.
Right.
That's excellent.
That's most of the History Channel, though. It
yeah.
used to be. Now it's UFOs. I have a couple of these I've been thinking about. First one is Captain Planet, which I've talked about before.
I think 1976 to 78, by the way.
Excellent.
I was a little off.
Oh. Captain Planet, I think, would be a great, great show if you did it right. And this is something like Pacific Rim kind of got me into, is like this idea of this multicultural force. And then the special effects are there where you could do a live-action Captain Planet. You're going to have to redesign the captain, though, because green hair and blue skin is not going to fly in today's age.
No, that's a bad look.
Yeah. It's red, blue skin, green hair, red outfit.
That would look great on my washed out television screen.
Excellent. The other thing, now that the Oculus Rift is out, I think somebody has to do a port of Duck Hunt. But in full 3D with your head moving around and like...
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. I think that would be awesome.
I mean, in a way, would you do Duck Hunt or is this going to be the domain of Big Buck Hunter?
No, it'll be all 8-bit.
Oh.
100% 8-bit.
I think that could... I feel like being in a 3D world that's actually made up of 8-bit and this dimension and depth and stuff would be enough to fragment your mind and send you to some, like, cataclysmic horror cycle that you couldn't possibly return from.
This is something that, like, I don't think people have been talking about with the Oculus Rift. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to try it because they were at PAX Australia, so I'm assuming they'll be at PAX. And we got our media badges in
hand. They all sunk on the way back.
Right. So
the Japanese submarine.
We'll definitely do some coverage of Oculus Rift. That's kind of my number one thing I want to try at PAX.
But we're gonna have to deck you out for that line.
Yeah, I just feel like it's gonna. I just feel like it's going to really kind of freak me out the first time I do it. Like every time somebody puts it on, they're like, "Holy crap!" Like
yeah.
I don't know what it's gonna be like to be in a fully immersive 3D world.
I could have one of those Uncanny Valley experiences, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the opportunity for the Uncanny Valley to happen. Josh, thanks for your call. And once again, guys, fantasy football coming up soon. Up next, we got another call this week. It's from our good friend JR in Philly. You know him. You love him. He beers it up. Here's his call this week.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's JR from Philly. And listen, I've got a lot of things to get to this week. So I'm just going to dive right in. First, I have another article to share for you out of the DailyMeal.com. They rated the 25 best craft breweries in America. So how did they get to 25? They consulted with some of the country's, quote, leading craft beer experts. I don't know. Did you get a call about this? Because I didn't. But anyway, they found some people to narrow down the 2,538 craft breweries down to 72 nominees. And then readers of their site voted 11,500 votes. And so they narrowed this list down. 5, Cigar City.
What?
4, Founders. 3, Boulevard Brewing Company. 2, Stone. Very nice. And number 1, they have Dogfish Head.
What?
So I like what these guys were talking about in the article. They said there's a difference between what's called the best and beers that are beloved. So they talk about the subjectiveness of craft beer. And there's certain breweries that operate at the intersection of best and beloved. So they're interviewing this guy, Tristan Chan, from Porch Drinking. And he says, when you're narrowing these beers down, you have to have solid flagships, interesting new styles, and seasonal beers, as well as the business of design, marketing, and fan base building. And that's an interesting point, because sometimes you look at a bottle with a really slick label, and you're like, oh, that can't be good. They're just throwing all their money at marketing. But good point there. And he also says the craft beer movement has forced breweries to step up. And I don't think we're anywhere near oversaturation. Craft beer doesn't get enough credit for innovation and reinventing beers. And they're doing that every day. And it's impossible to be bored. Good point. He also said nobody gets into the craft brewing business for the money. Also valid point. Despite the long hours, grueling work, and task of starting a business from the ground up, these guys do it to make you a better beer. Very nice little article there. So anyways, a couple of the other things I was thinking about for this week. Eric, why do you not like wheat beers? Wheat beers are like the most accessible beers that everybody likes. Even people that are just dipping their toe into the craft beer pool.
You just answered your own question.
Wheat beers. Is that why you don't like them? You need to explain this to me. I don't understand. Some of my favorite beers are wheat beers. And I also want to tell you, they had a Deschutes tasting out here.
Oh.
And I guess Deschutes has just gotten regional distribution in the greater Philadelphia area. So around, I guess, November, you're going to start to see it more and more on the East Coast area coming out of Philly. And so I was really excited by that because everything I tried down the whole sampler was awesome. I really like the white IPA. And their
Chainbreaker
Porter was also really excellent. So
Blackbeard.
Very excited for the shoots. I'm very excited for the West Coast beers. And I thought I'd finish off this week by asking you a little video game question. What kind of pants do the Mario Brothers wear? Denim, denim, denim. That's all I got for this week. Get off my backs. Later.
Get off all my backs, JR.
Get off 2 of my 3 backs.
Get off 4 of my 6. Yeah, I what do you think of that list, dude?
I don't know. The whole list thing. I'm not a fan of lists. I went on Beer Advocate the other day for the first time in like 6 months and like barfed in my mouth.
Yep.
I don't think we need to be ranking things. I don't think that, like, I don't know that you can say that Dogfish Head is better than Stone or that one is better than the other. They do different things. They achieve different goals. They have different agendas and different, you know, plans. Yep. And I kind of like the Belgian mindset when it comes to beer. And I think we as American consumers could learn a lot from the Belgians.
Yep.
They despise styles. They'll, if you ask them to, like, can you define the styles of a lambic? They'll be like, no, I can't do that. Or define a saison. They're like, well, it could be any number of these things, and you take this beer, it's a saison, take this beer, it's also a saison. They're completely different beers. So I think as Americans, we have a tendency to want to classify things as the best and put them in competitions and have gold awards and silver awards and all that, whereas really we should just be appreciating the beer for what it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of my
seriously, tell me how you really feel.
I just want to be number one so bad, and I'm jealous.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I don't agree that Dogfish Head is, like, the best brewery in the world, but everybody should have their own best brewery. I don't need somebody else to tell me what my favorite brewery is.
And as soon as you narrow it down to 72 and then open it up to your readers, then you'd have piling on, then you have mob mentality.
Right. Then you have the marketing for votes. Yeah,
and it kind of goes out the window at that point.
Word up, yo. Also, great joke. JR, we love you. JR is we've been blowing up lately with this beer exchange. I opened up a can of worms with this thing. Actually, John O'Brien opened up a can of worms with this thing.
Yeah, you sent him a pretty bad beer if he opened up a can of worms.
Well, it's an acquired taste. But we're actually starting to think about how we can figure this out in a legal and efficient way to set up a beer network around the United States based on personal
interests. I don't think it should be too hard. There's already a robust beer swap community on Reddit.
Like, yeah. So
I'm pretty sure we could do our own thing. I kind of want to do like a periodical Secret Santa. Maybe it's once every 3 months or something.
Beer Crit Santa.
We'll work on the name.
Yep. I mean, we're getting this stuff from all over the place. So we'd love to set up a beer exchange. Also, John O'Brien, your stuff is on the way. All right, let's do a little Tiny Matt roll off and get this show on the road. What do you say?
I'd say it's about damn time.
We're each going to roll a 20-sided die, see who gets to talk first on the podcast this week. And here we go.
I rolled a 20.
God damn it. It's 2 weeks in a row.
Tell me you rolled a 1.
I rolled a 14.
Oh.
I thought it was a solid roll.
I'm establishing a dynasty.
220s here. In a row is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a 1 in 400.
All right.
So,
go for
400
it.
Episodes from now, I can expect to do it again.
Uh-huh.
So my first topic is the second rise of Facebook, a possible mea culpa from the Personal Arrogance podcast.
Excellent.
So on Wednesday morning, Facebook's stock made it to an important point for them.
Yep.
And they were trading above $38 a share, which is the initial asking price for Facebook stock.
Yep.
They first started selling shares in May 2012, and when we brought it up, we were like, do not buy. There's no way it's worth that. And we were immediately
gratified.
Yeah, gratified. We were on the right side of history there.
Word.
As the stock dipped really low to like $15 or something.
Yep.
But they finally climbed back above their $38 a share level for a brief second, and then ended at $36.80. So it does seem like the company is back on the path to financial success, I guess.
Uh-huh.
As a public, publicly traded entity. So I thought maybe we could talk about the status of Facebook. It's weird to talk about it because Facebook, we all know that Facebook is lame.
Right.
But we use it. I use Facebook every day. Like, we use it for our podcast a lot. That's how we get, you know, feedback from you. And it would be weird to live in a world where, like, if Facebook had just failed and then gone bankrupt.
Oh, yeah.
That would have created like this massive social networking vacuum.
Absolutely. Well, something would have come in to fill its place. I mean,
certainly.
Facebook is the beer, but it's like the bad version of beer. Like, I just hate it.
It's the Coors Light.
And yet I do it every day.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
And I can't not do it. I just do it every day. It's extremely habitual at this point. I got my Facebook account 9 years ago.
Yeah, I was looking at that back when I started, and I was like, oh my God, I've been doing this for a long time.
I've almost had a decade of my life on Facebook. How fucking insane is that?
That's over a third of your life. Think about that.
Dude, Mark Zuckerberg is licking his chops at the information, the juicy info that I have from June of 2005.
Yes.
Stored on my Facebook page.
So is the NSA.
Oh, yeah. Well, they already know.
Yeah. Except maybe not. Maybe you cleverly hit it in plain sight.
That's true.
I'm too busy tapping your phone where your true terrorist secrets are on your Facebook page from 2005.
Yeah. I just named the album PAX 2010. They're like, I'm not going anywhere near that.
That's a deep cut full of terrorist
too
secrets.
Too deep. All right. Yeah. I mean, Facebook is weird. I think the number one thing, though, is that they're making a lot of profit off of advertisements.
Exactly. They're making advertising. And their new advertising agenda is that they're planning to sell TV-style commercials, as they call it, for as much as $2.5 million a day.
That makes sense, dude. I actually have Facebook open right now. I'm going to scroll down and see how long it takes for me to hit an ad. Now, I've got T-Fury on the top, but T-Fury is this page that I subscribe to.
So I got ads on the right. I keep Life Improvement and camera memory cards.
I got swimwear up to 50% off, and then MS in bioinformatics. Networked for life. But if I'm scrolling down my actual news feed, oh, here it is, second post down. From Metro PCS, it's a suggested page. Like no other annual contract, nationwide 4G, all the speed you need for $40, period. Metro PCS.
Yeah, I have a Budweiser.
Took me no time.
Which is exceptionally offensive to me.
Well, the other thing they did is they took all of your things that were in your interest lists.
Yeah.
And then they turned those into ads, basically.
Yeah.
So, like, this is my list. I'm going to go down the line here and see how far I have to get to hit an actual personal Facebook post. We got T-Fury number one. We got Metro PCS number two. We got Jeopardy number three. Congratulations to Skylar Hornback, who set a Jeopardy Kids Week record today. Watch the video to see how it happened. Jeopardy. Number four, Slash Film. Number five, Polygon. Number six, Conan O'Brien Presents. Number seven, Bald Move.
What a bunch of assholes.
And then finally, number eight, Mitchell Netzer. So it took eight posts to get to an actual personal Facebook post.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, from this article I was reading, they're saying that the average is like, as far as just, you know, ads, like hard ads, like they paid, it's not in your interest or anything, they paid to get this in your deal. It's like 1 in 20.
Yeah.
But do you think that this TV-style commercial, because I'm guessing what they're going to do is they're going to force you to watch a commercial before you can access your deal.
Okay.
That's just my guess.
I don't think that's true. I think they'll probably start off with the model they have now where you just click on the commercial. Because if I'm looking at these, Jeopardy is a video. Polygon is a video. Conan O'Brien's a video. Like, they have video content that they're already using to advertise for this stuff.
Yeah, but if they're going to pay $2.5 million a day, they're going to force you to watch it.
Mm.
If that's what the asking price is going to be. Yeah. I think it's going to be like a YouTube sort of scenario.
Yeah.
Where it comes up. You have to watch, you know, at least 5 seconds of it, and then you can skip it.
I think it might be a thing where you click on, like, say, here's a photo album. I'm going to click on that on Mitch's Barbecue, and then before I can look at the pictures of Mitch's Barbecue, then I have to watch, like, a 30-second ad for Verizon.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's basically the kind of scenario that I've laid out.
Yeah.
At some point, there's going to be a content wall that you're going to hit. You're going to have to go through an ad to progress.
Yep.
And you talk about how habitual this has gotten for you, because it is like a little drug. You log onto your Facebook and you're like, I want to see that little red one.
Oh,
I want to know you get an itch. You're like,
right.
It's been a while since I've been on Facebook. I want to scratch that itch. I want to see how many people have directly interacted with me or tagged me, added a photo of me, commented to me. You know, it's a very self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Experience, but you get like a little, at least, I think you get a little like dopamine rush or something when see that, because you're
absolutely.
Like, oh, right, something's happening to me, or I'm important.
Right, or what I said got recognized by somebody else. I mean, it's kind of the same thing you do with like your Reddit comments, but the difference is
I don't read those.
Oh.
You see that orange mail envelope, I'm like, oh man, some asshole's going to tear me a new one.
See, I usually...
I fear the Reddit comments. Everyone's such a blowhard douchebag asshole on Reddit. Here's the thing about Reddit is...
wait a second.
95% of the posts, you could just insert at the beginning, well, actually...
Jesse, but if everybody is the blowhard on Reddit, you are on Reddit.
Yeah, but I don't participate. I'm a lurker.
Exactly. Right. How much comment karma do you have?
Like 50.
Really?
It's really low. I have a bunch of link karma.
I'm sitting at 516 comment karma.
I don't know.
People like what I say.
I got a couple like I'm not even. See, I don't even log in anymore.
Yeah. Well, I look at it on my phone, so it's like auto logged in.
But the point of this whole like Facebook ad wall thing, which is going to happen, is how much of an inconvenience are you willing to sit through to scratch that itch, that right. compulsion you have to check your Facebook? Because right. I don't really watch YouTube anymore. I'm kind of frustrated at the amount of ads. And
the thing that pisses me off about YouTube is when people have ads on videos that have like 35 views. It's like, you need to fucking earn your ad, bro.
Yeah, I hate the pop-up things where it's like, click here to subscribe, please do it, LOL.
Subscribe now, subscribe for more videos.
Yeah, and so like I've hit that point on when it comes to YouTube where I'm not going to frequent that website because right. I find it more of an annoyance than a joy, I guess. So I mean, at what point does the same thing happen to Facebook? On one hand, it's so deeply ingrained into us with like 8-9 years of
nearly a decade.
Yeah, going on a decade of using this and. Well, looking forward to seeing that little red deal, but on the other hand, like, it could get fucking annoying.
I mean, the difference is that, like, I have my Gmail, and I have like, 5 emails on my phone. I got my work email, I got my Gmail, I got the personal arrogance email, I got, like, 2 other emails. I got a ton of emails. So, I don't really like getting emails. Emails are a nuisance to me. I love the little red number, though, that pops up on my Globe and my Facebook page.
Yeah, I know. And it's a weird thing. Yeah. But and it's a total – you get a little rush out of it. It's like hardwired into your psyche at this point.
Right. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for me to hate this thing, but I can't. I can't quit you, Facebook.
I keep thinking I'm getting there. But
yeah, I know.
So, I mean, with that in mind, do you think that buying Facebook stock is actually a pretty solid idea?
Nah.
No.
I've taken a look at my financials, and I found that just straight up investing in normal, full on, things like the Dow or like NASDAQ or Spider are the most sound investments. So just worry about that stuff and let them figure it out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Did I just make it boring?
No, I'm too dumb for that.
I learned that on Frontline.
No, it makes sense. I mean, what are they always? They're always like, just buy gold.
Well, yeah, gold, but gold will bust eventually. Hopefully.
I mean, that's an interesting question in and of itself. Is how long will gold, this one of many like metals that's soft and not even that useful, except it has like electronic utilizations and it's popular for jewelry. Like, how long is that going to be like the dominant thing that we lust over on Earth?
Well, I mean, it's only been, what, 4,000 years? So, you know, it'll run its course eventually.
I'm going to put all my money in savings and loans.
I like to – see, one thing I like to use Facebook for is to prime my comments for Reddit. So, like, one of my friends posted something about, like, the NHL in Seattle. And then I did a bunch of research, and I was like, – I can't believe that Seattle doesn't have an NHL team. And then, like, I did all this research, and then I got some good responses on Facebook, so then I posted it on Reddit, because today on the Seattle Reddit, somebody posted the same thing. So check this out, Jesse. I say, it's insane that Seattle doesn't have the big 4 sports. Seattle is the 14th largest media market in the country. The 12th, 13th, and 15th largest markets, Miami, Detroit, and Phoenix, all have an MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL team. I think the NHL and even the NBA know that they're missing out on a big opportunity by not having a team here. 14 upvotes, bro. 14
well,
upvotes.
Well, actually, San Jose is much bigger when you consider its adjacency to Sacramento.
I actually got a couple of those posts that were like, well, you know, people just think it's too far away.
Well, actually, most people consider it a very isolated market. Geographically, it's the most isolated of the major media markets.
Well,
that's my Reddit impersonation.
That's your Reddit voice. Anyway, but meet your softball team there. You'll have some fun. Yeah, man, Facebook, crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's such a weird beast at this point. It's so ubiquitous, yet at the same time, it's like no one pays for it, yet it makes all this money, and it's, I don't know, it's bizarre.
Yep. Well, my first topic this week is going to have to do with our favorite thing, PAX.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So PAX is coming up 29 days away from the recording of this podcast. So get used to hearing about it, because we're going to talk about it. I love PAX so much. It's my Christmas, my New Year's, my Halloween, and my St. Patrick's Day all rolled into one.
And your wedding anniversary.
Yeah, don't throw in Martin Luther King. MLK Junior, Day. MLK
I throw
Day.
In Martin Luther, the original.
Yeah, Martin Luther Day and Martin Luther King Day.
Do they have a Martin Luther Day in Germany?
Oh, probably. They have one at PLU. Anyway. So PAX is coming up. And, you know, we want to make this PAX a great PAX. It's, first of all, it's the first PAX that's going to be 4 days long, which is crazy. Second of all, Jesse and I both have media badges for the first time in the history of our PAX experience, which we've combined been to over 20 PAXes. So yikes. It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, I've almost spent over a month at PAX, a month of my life at PAX, which I think
man.
Is a great thing.
If I had a fucking time machine, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I was just going to PAX for a month.
Over and over. Like, PAX 09 was so good.
It'd be crazy to, like, relive, like, PAX 05 and be like, just the stuff you got excited over. Yeah. Like, it'd be different.
Somebody waited in line for 4 hours for Skyrim. His name's Jesse Wilson.
I didn't no, that's not how that happened.
What happened?
Dude, I was walking by the Skyrim line, and they were closing it down, and it was, like, the last group of people. I think I talked to the dude and asked if I could get in line, and he was like, sure. And it turned out that I was one of the lucky last people to get in that day. So I waited, like, 15 minutes.
You slithered in.
I did. Like, that's the true Slytherin I am.
Exactly. You're a Hufflepuff. So speaking of Slytherin, speaking of Hufflepuff, one of the biggest events of PAX on the PAX forums is the Triwizard Drinking Tournament, which is a pub crawl that's based around Harry Potter.
I've never participated.
I've signed up once, but I didn't participate. But I think the reason why I didn't participate is because, dude, we know beer. We know nerds. Yeah. We know PAX.
Yeah.
Why don't we do our own fucking pub crawl?
The PAX pub prowl.
Exact pub prowl. So we've talked about this in the past, Jesse. So I want to take this opportunity. We're great planners. We plan weddings. We plan bachelor parties. Let's plan a fucking pub crawl.
Plan a pub crawl.
Right now.
I like it. So,
PAX. So, first of all, we kind of know the theme because we've talked about this before. And by the way, guys, I'm not just bullshitting here. We're going to plan this pub crawl, and I'm going to post it on the PAX forums.
Okay. Well, you know, we are great planners, Eric, but what we're bad at is follow through.
That's why I'm going to post this event like immediately on the PAX forums, and then we're forced into it.
Okay.
And then we could film it for our media coverage.
So is this is Thursday night?
So there's a question there. We could do it Thursday night. We could do it Friday night. We could do it Saturday night. I was kind of thinking Saturday because I feel like Saturday's a nice lull.
Yeah.
Like Saturday
night. Yeah,
you've
already gotten
two full days of PAX.
Yeah.
And you're looking for something to do Saturday night. Now, Saturday night, there's also usually some industry events, but most of those are on Friday night.
That's a good point. But even if there are industry events, you could roll in with a furious thunder like 10,000 rampaging Mongolians.
Exactly. So we've talked about this before. We have the theme, I think, is the HP Pubcraft Love Crawl. Right? Like, I feel
Sorry,
like this
I
is
forgot
a,
about that.
This is a home run theme.
HP Pubcraft Love Crawl. I totally forgot about that.
So we got to figure out a way. Now, one big bummer here is that Vons is now closed.
Yeah, I feel like that is fine.
Okay.
That place was always too crowded anyway, and it was getting fucking expensive in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
we used to love
true.
It because it was cheap.
That's true.
It would. It, it would have been a good place as everyone stops off and gets a like a dirty martini.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that would have been perfect. Get a $3 martini.
Yeah.
And so that's what I want to talk about, because we'll figure out the bars later. There's plenty of bars in downtown Seattle. But we need to figure out what the theme of this overall pub crawl is going to be. So it's HP Pubcraft Love Crawl. I assume we're going to base this on Arkham Horror.
Yeah.
Is that a good assumption?
Yeah, so, yeah, totally.
And like anything that's nerdy, we should gamify this.
Uh-huh.
So how are we going to gamify this? How are we going to take the world of Arkham Horror and put it into downtown Seattle?
Interesting. Well, I would like to gamify it in a way that doesn't encourage binge drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I'm beyond that.
Yep.
Have you heard about like the pub golf thing?
No, what's that?
It's like you do 9 holes, which are 9 different bars, and you get 1 drink at each bar.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get like the lowest amount of swings possible, or strokes, whatever. Uh-huh. What do you call it in golf?
Strokes.
Strokes.
Yep.
So like each stroke is however many sips it takes you to finish.
Oh no.
Beer. Yeah.
Ugh. I hope all the beers are like Coors Light 69 or whatever. Actually, that's my Reddit name.
That's my brewery name.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I kind of like that idea. I mean, I like incorporating the idea of clue tokens, because like clue tokens are like a part of, you know.
Yeah, there should be like some sort of riddle. Like, you get a printout, and there's some sort of, like, short story whodunit kind of riddle.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't you don't have enough pieces to the puzzle.
Right.
Until you get clue tokens. So, like, each one of these places you go to, you order a drink at each bar, you get 1 clue token.
See, I would love that. Like, you go, you have people there, you get a clue token, and then whoever can figure out the mystery the fastest wins.
I'm sure you could go to the bartender.
Yeah.
Bartenders just want money, right?
Right.
You say, we're going to draw a small crowd that will come periodically through here. They're going to be instructed to ask the bartender for a clue token.
Right.
And you just have them on like little cut up pieces of paper.
Right.
Just hand them this little piece of paper, and that has a clue on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like everyone says, don't forget to tip your bartender or whatever.
Right. Well, or like you could do that, but when I think of a pub crawl, I think of like you're a group and you all show up at one pub together, you all leave together and you go to another pub. So it's kind of like a pub takeover.
Mm.
But what I like about the idea is that like you can go up to the bar and maybe order a special drink at each bar. So you could talk to the bars beforehand and say, hey, we're going to do this. Is there like a drink we could do that would be good? And then you get a clue token with your drink. Or you find whoever is posted up at that bar, and they're like characters from Arkham Horror, and then you have to bring the drink over to them, and they give you a clue token or something like that.
Yeah, but no one wants to post up at a bar and do this.
No, it's fine. They'll all be part of the group, except when they're at their bar that they have to post up at. So then they'll find like a dark corner or something. This will work.
Okay.
So, like, Levi will be the detective at one bar. He'll have a backpack with a trench coat in it. And then when he gets to his bar, he'll put on the trench coat and post up in the corner. And then he's the guy who hands out the clue tokens at that bar.
Yeah, I get it. But he doesn't know what the clues are. They're in, like, a sealed bag or something.
Yeah,
so
something
can't
like
peek.
That. Yeah, and basically what we need to do is we need to be gearing up toward this ancient one arriving in Seattle.
But who knows? Only the creator knows the answer to the mystery, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, someone has to put this all together.
Or, like, you know, we could do it as a team. We could do it as a group and figure that out. But we'll be the core team. We can't win. That makes sense.
Okay, so we're, like, the game masters.
Yeah, we're the game masters.
Mm-hmm.
So you are the game master of our group.
Oh, great.
Right? I mean, you are, like, you could come up with an interesting thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a story perspective, because you do this a lot for D&D.
Right. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Who's going to go to this, though?
This is the thing. We'll just post it on the forums and then see who signs up.
Oh.
We'll have a better idea.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, If we're going to do that, we're going to sell t-shirts.
All right.
Because I want to make money off of this.
All right. Sounds good. I don't know. I think you don't need to go to 9 bars. You can go to like 4 bars, and I think it's
oh,
five.
No, definitely not. 9 is way too many.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like this idea. I think that this could be a really fun thing. And there are some cool bars that are around there. I would kind of like the whole thing to end at Shorty's.
Yeah, that's a great place.
It's a good distance. It's a good distance away from the convention center, but you're going to want to hit some stops along the way because it's a little too far to just walk in one foul swoop.
Well, I'm actually sold on this idea. I could put together a fun little mystery. I love storytelling.
I know you could, dude. You just need the push.
Yeah, I just need the push.
You put together the story, and like that's the thing. Like we're gearing toward. We're basically just. Just gearing toward Cthulhu coming to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do what we can to prevent Cthulhu from coming to Seattle.
No, where it's
like going to
end is a midnight break-in at the Seattle Aquarium.
Oh, God. Stealing the octopus and then everyone gets arrested.
No, we steal the octopus and then we take care of it overnight and then throw it at Gabe and Tycho in the morning.
Perfect.
Hit him smacking that bald head. 1,000 tentacles.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping around.
Suction cups.
It immediately turns into alien.
Boop, 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 boop. Yeah, exactly.
And I think one thing we could do, which would be kind of fun, is that like, so Lovecraftian mythology, you're also the Lovecraft expert of the group. So, but Lovecraftian mythology, we have, you know, kind of code words or like ancient religions or cults that are all kind of secretive and clandestine. So each of these bars could like have, it's like a bar, but then it's also on like under a clandestine or under the guise of another dimension. Once you enter this bar and know how to look at it in the right way, it becomes
a space. Yeah, each bar is its own dimension for sure.
Yeah, totally.
This is classic dimensional shambler.
Yeah, they're dimensional
territory.
Portals. Each bar is a dimensional portal.
Oh man, you could have fun with this, and like
each
bar you enter in for part of the game, you have to behave differently.
Yeah, so you're in the Dreamlands, you're having a great time.
Uh-huh.
You're in Rillie, you're fucked.
You have to pick a fight with a stranger.
Right.
There's a star spawn behind you.
Yeah, there is a fucking star spawn. Yeah, it's too bad we can't do this with all of Seattle because I would love to just hit all my favorite bars. Like one would be the Baranoff. Like, another one would be Cafe Mox. They're too damn spaced out. The other idea about this is we could try to do it in Ballard and see how that works out. Because Ballard, I feel like, would be a more fun environment to do it in.
Ballard would be more fun, but you're not going to get people.
Yeah.
If you want anyone besides just our group of friends, and it would be fun to do it just our group of friends, too.
Right? There's 70,000 people who are going to be at this thing.
Yeah.
If we could find 20 people to hang out at Ballard for a night, I don't think that would be that hard.
There might even be 20 people from Ballard going to PAX. I don't know.
Exactly. I'll just post on r/Ballard.
Yeah, there you go. Post it in like Seattle and stuff. Seattle.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I don't know. We'll figure it out, dude. But you do the thing. I'll do a little write up and I'll put it on the forums. And let's get this push going. I think it'll be a fun thing to do.
That'd be a lot of fun. A little bit.
All right, dude. Well, I'm excited. I think this is a perfect time to move into our break. Usually we do trivia, but I want to do something a little different tonight. And I've been thinking up lately, you know, we've done a couple of posts so far that have been about linguistics. We've done three segments so far on linguistics, on the Geordies, on just weird words. And I think it's about time we take the ball to our own court. I've been thinking up some definitions of words that I would like to be able to just articulate myself.
Okay.
So there's two definitions, Jesse, and I think we need to figure out what the actual meaning of these words should be. Okay? Are you with me?
So we're getting the definitions?
Right.
Or we're just getting the word?
I'm going to give you a definition. We come up with the word. Because
okay, cool.
These are some things that I've been musing on that are like, there's really nothing. There's no word that I know of that can articulate this, but I'd like to be able to articulate it.
Wow, this is really becoming like a segment in a like on the funnies page of the newspaper.
It is. This is what we're slowly devolving into. That's what we'll be doing when we're like 70 years old. Is just a segment on the funny pages.
Oh, we're going to get that sweet, sweet Dear Amy money.
Sweet, sweet Funny Page money.
Funnies are money, as they say in the newspaper biz.
All right. So my first definition is when you know you will hate something in the future but love it now.
Ooh.
So the thing that made me think about this was Gangnam Style. Okay. Because yeah. Like when Gangnam Style first came out, I was so into it. I watched the video countless times, gave me so much joy, but I knew in my heart of hearts that like in a year I will not like this song. And that happens a lot with songs that I like. It's like, oh, I love this song so much. Like right now, Robin Thicke, Blurred Lines, like that's a jam, dude. But I know in a year that song's gonna be worn out and I'm gonna be tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
yeah, totally.
So that's kind of what I want to start off. What is a good word for something that you love right now, but you know that you will hate it in the future?
I'm going to throw out passophilia.
Okay.
Like passophilia.
Uh-huh.
Like it's going to be passé, but you're loving it.
I actually really – that's great, dude. You're using actual etymology.
Well.
Passophilia. Plus it sounds a little risque.
Yeah. In some states, it's still illegal.
I was going to say, like, hater-like.
Hater-like.
Hater-like. So I like it now, but I'm going to hate it later. It puts later, hate, and like all in the same word, hater-like.
Yeah, hater-like is good.
Good. Okay. And my second definition that I want to hit is the moment when you turn on a sports game and you immediately choose which side you will like, even though you have no stake in the game or no reason to like either team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I do that a lot. It's like, guess totally. I like, I'm liking the Royals.
Right, exactly. Oh, Royals. Royals Tigers? Who should I root for here? Yeah, this happens a lot during football season.
Because,
like, in Seattle, you know, you get the what's called the late game, which starts at 1 o'clock here and 4 o'clock on the East Coast. But you wake up in the morning, and at 10 a.m., they have a game playing.
Okay, I got one.
Yeah.
I got a word.
Yep.
Indifrenzy.
Indifrenzy.
It's like indifference and frenzy together.
I like it. And also, like, you kind of default to Indy as a team.
Yeah.
Home of the Bald Move Tower.
Yeah, I gotta love them Colts.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's C-U-L-T-S, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hence all the, well, you know.
Is there not like a cult? Like, isn't there not like a fan group called the Colts? The C-U-L-T-S?
Oh, yeah, I mean.
There should be.
Yeah, that's what their fan should be called, the right. Cult.
Yeah.
The Cult.
Cult. And in that spirit, I'm just gonna call this Cult. This is cult. I'm just having a time. I'm figuring out which team I like. I'm turning on a game. It's the Titans versus the Buccaneers, and I'm just going to pick a team.
Go Bucks. Fuck that Hasselbeck.
Jake Locker, baby. Seattle Bourne.
I don't care. I'm a Ducks guy through and through.
Oh, man. I cannot agree with you there.
I love them. They're the Lannisters of the NCAA football.
I think there's plenty of other Lannisters.
No way. They got the money.
USC literally couldn't play in a bowl game for like 2 years. But they still, you know, Reggie Bush and all that.
Yeah, I don't know. Still, I mean, Jaime Lannister has like gold plated mail and like a sword of pure gold because he's so rich. That's classic Ducks. They, like, change their
their uniforms every week. Yeah.
Exactly.
So those are my two words. If you guys have a definition or words that would match these definitions, we have something you like now but you know you will hate later, and then picking a team the moment you turn on the game even though you have no stake in it. If you have a good word for each of these definitions, please send it to us, personalarrogance@gmail.com.
Also send in if you have a definition in need of
right?
a word.
Oh, totally.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we need that. All right, Jesse, what's your second topo?
So my second topic is from sciencemag.org. It's science. Among primates, and even perhaps including humans, they believe that they've discovered the biological reason behind monogamy.
Oh, real?
Yeah, the reason, you know, you shack up with one person, and they think it might be to protect infants from being killed by rival males.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A.K.A. infanticide.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's a bunch of, well, actually, only 5% of species on Earth are monogamous.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like an interesting trait that humans have.
Interesting. And it's not something that primates have, right? Like, there's, like, the alpha gorilla who just runs the whole show, right?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So, other species that are monogamous, 90% of bird species are monogamous.
Uh-huh.
And they think it's because incubating an egg and feeding it is basically a full-time job, you know, for both parents.
Okay, so you're saying 90% of birds are monogamous, but only 5% of the animal population is monogamous.
Yeah, so...
So this includes insects, is what you're
saying. Insects, fish, bacteria.
Yeah. This is like every living organism that's not a plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously in mammals, you don't have that need because the baby's not being incubated in an egg.
Right.
And when it comes to milk production, I'm sorry, Russell Nisha, there's not much I can do for you.
Yep.
So, obviously, the bird model doesn't quite fit primates. But in the primate realm, 27% of primate species are socially monogamous.
Uh-huh.
Which means, basically, once you have the kid, you're hooked together as a pair. It doesn't mean you don't have sex with other people ever. But they're calling it socially monogamous.
Right.
So the theories are behind this is that... monogamy provides more effective parental care for infants,
yep.
as in birds. It prevents females from mating with rival males at all,
yep.
just the dudes there. Or it protects against the risk of infanticide. And,
yep.
So infanticide, I guess, is very high among certain primate groups like chimpanzees and gorillas.
Dude, chimpanzees are fucking crazy.
Yeah, chimpanzees are...
murderous
totally
mobs.
Insane. And they're like 300 pound piles of nothing but sinuous muscle.
Yeah, and then people are like, oh, dude, I'll have one as a pet. No! No!
He'll put his fingernails under your chin and tear your face off and laugh.
Yeah, literally, left to their own devices, they have murderous cannibal gangs that roam the jungle. Okay, chimpanzees are fucking crazy. You don't want a chimp.
Yeah, gorillas, you know, possibly even worse.
Yeah, but gorillas, so, like, you don't fuck with a gorilla because, like, that's the thing about a chimp is, like, you don't think it's bad. You don't think it's that bad because it's, like, small, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
have you ever seen a picture of a hairless chimpanzee?
No.
Horrifying. You would never think it's something cute and cuddly ever again if you saw that.
Yeah, but, like, gorillas are, like, something, like, that's, like, a lion. Like, I'm not going to fuck with a gorilla. Because, like, I know it's going to destroy me. Like a Siberian tiger. Like, you expect that from a Siberian tiger because it's a killing machine. It needs the calories to survive because it's so fucking large.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like plants.
Well, that's what's interesting about gorillas is that, like, they're so big and they're, like, 100% muscle and they eat leaves.
Right.
like lions and tigers and shit are like bringing down gazelles and zebras and eating their flesh. Like gorillas,
you get to a certain size and then plants are pretty much the only thing that you literally can't kill enough. You can't be a big enough murderer to feed yourself. You have to just go to plants.
That's true. I've never actually thought about that. Like, if an elephant ate meat, it would have to be on a killing rampage 24/7.
All the time. It would be terrifying.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But so maybe it's a combination of all those three factors. But
this is the part that like I always had a problem with in The Lion King because we're talking about infanticide. You know, lions are a species that practice infanticide. Once a male lion challenges the male of the pride, the alpha of the pride, and beats him, he then kills all of his cubs that are his offspring.
Like, right. So this is where, like, monogamy is good, especially on the woman's part, where it's like, you know, even if you beat up my boyfriend, I'm still not going to let you kill my kids.
Well, and this is the part that I've always had kind of a problem with in the Lion King, because when Scar takes over the pride, Nala is toast, dude. Like, Nala should be dead. And he's lucky. Simba is lucky that he's alive. Really, Scar should have killed Simba, too. But in Animal Kingdom, Nala would be toast.
Yeah, whose kid was Nala?
Really? I mean, she should have been Mufasa's kid as well. Like, they should be brother and sister. At least half-brother and half-sister.
But they're lovers.
Well, that's how the pride,
man,
that's how
the
pride
Lannisters
works.
Are running deep in this episode. But that's the thing, though. Scar wouldn't kill her because she's a girl and could potentially become a mate later on. He would kill the boys.
Oh, God. That's the other thing that you don't realize about Nala. She probably has a couple cubs with Scar. God, the Lion King.
Yeah.
The Lion King just got so depressing.
Well, the Animal Kingdom is horrifying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, lots of murder happening.
But luckily, our good friends, our homies, Homo sapiens, right? Got monogamous, and we're like, let's stop killing each other and killing everyone's babies, please.
Well, the other thing that's good about monogamy, and I don't know, this is obviously an instinctual thing that humans do at least, but it's like, if you have a kid, then you can split the duties in a more efficient way, right?
Literally, the diaper changing, the duties.
Right, exactly. The D-O-O-D-I-E-S.
Correct.
But if you have three people in the mix, then it gets kind of complicated.
Yeah,
so you just want to keep it to
I've
two.
I've seen Sister Wives, and it's just drama, drama, drama.
Just keep it to two. It's a lot of drama, and it's a lot of tank tops over T-shirts. So just leave it to two.
What?
That's what they wear on Sister Wives. It's like tank tops over shirts, because they can't wear like tank tops by themselves.
Oh, I did not know that.
Now it's all you're going to see. You can't unsee that on Sister Wives.
Well, I've learned something from this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so monogamy, it's for the better. It's what sets us apart from the other 95% of the animal kingdom, except those birds who are on our level.
Well, it takes two, baby. Also, birds are basically dinosaurs, so they figured this shit out a long time ago.
That's true. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they know what's up. And also, let's not forget that, I mean, sure, they're like, well, since humans don't have lay eggs, it's not necessarily that. It's like, okay, but having a baby is just like having an egg. I mean, it doesn't move. It doesn't hunt. It doesn't, you know, feed itself.
Yep, it's
you're
going to
be sitting on that egg, hopefully not literally, but figuratively for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, I like it, dude. It takes two people, man. Two people. Just double it up. Two people.
Yeah.
People it up, people.
Tandem bicycle of parents.
Exactly. There you go. All right. Let's move on to my second topic this week. It's actually coming off something that that Jacob DeFore posted on our Facebook thread. He said, board game funded by Kickstarter at the amount of $122,000 canceled a year later.
And that was almost my second topic. I'm glad I found this monogamy thing.
Well, I actually had a different second topic until I learned some breaking news that came out today regarding this. So first of all, you know, we were all waiting for this to happen in Kickstarter. Some project to get a ton of money and to not deliver. The question here is, will this kill Kickstarter? Will this kill confidence in Kickstarter? You have a game, this game, which is actually a Lovecraftian game, Lovecraftian themed game. I think it's called Horror in Atlantic City.
Yeah, well, let's not forget that this is like the most fucked out concept ever.
It's Monopoly meets Lovecraft.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could not be more, oh my God, please don't do that. Like, this is such a stupid idea. Lovecraft is fucked out, and Monopoly is uber fucked out.
Well, it's the doom that came to Atlantic City. The thing that really sold this was that you were going to get a bunch of miniatures, which is what sells every like giant Kickstarter game, is miniatures.
Really?
Put some miniatures in it, and it makes over $100,000. people love miniatures. But yeah, so basically it's like a Monopoly board, and then they incorporated Lovecraftian elements into it. And like we said, it made over $122,000, $122,874 on Kickstarter over a year ago. Then this company, The Forking Path, it's basically The Fucking Path, right? They suck because they quit on this game. After making $122,000, they decided, oh, yeah, we actually can't do this. There's some logistical stuff we didn't plan for, and now we can't deliver the game. $122,000? Are you joking?
Yeah.
Like, most board games on Kickstarter make somewhere between, like, $5,000 and $10,000. You got $122,000 and you can't deliver a game? Just really, really sad stuff. And the saddest part about this is that there are these two guys, Lee Moyer and Keith Baker. They're the designers of the game. This is their baby. They gave it to Forking Path to get this thing off the ground. Forking Path took their good faith, made $122,000, and then can't deliver on the product. These guys are holding the bag, you know, from a fan perspective, people are saying, what the fuck? And they're like, we had nothing to do with this. We were just the designers of the game, and all we want is our game to hit the table. And this company fucked us over.
I feel like there could be definitely a lawsuit here.
Well, the problem is nowadays, when you put something on Kickstarter, there is now a provision that says all companies will make a good faith effort to fulfill all rewards offered in their Kickstarter. And that provision was not in place when the Doom that came to Atlantic City went on Kickstarter.
Oh.
So, and I think there was actually some kind of risk thing that you would sign up to when you posted your money saying that, like, you may not actually get your reward. Which, eventually there's going to be a Kickstarter lawsuit because people are paying for this stuff expecting something in return. And when they don't get
right.
it, I mean, this is a model that PBS has used forever. Is like, hey, give us $75, we give you a CD. That's the Kickstarter model. And if you don't get your CD, then that is a fraud. There's fraud in that transaction.
Right.
So anyway, it's a real bummer because basically everybody who gave to this Kickstarter isn't getting any money for it. Or they're not getting their money back. They said they're going to make every effort to give their money back. But if you already spent $122,000, how are you going to make another $122,000 to give back to the people?
Yeah, like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's really sad. It's a bummer. And it's a type of thing that could potentially sink Kickstarter. So really, I would think that Kickstarter would be the one who would step up to the plate and say, hey, we're going to refund all your money.
Yeah, that would be a really good move on their part.
It would be a good move. But actually, instead of that happening, it hasn't happened yet at least, a company stepped up. Cryptozoic. They are a They are a company that has put out – they had an extremely successful Kickstarter campaign for a game called Hex, which made over $1 million. It's an online TCG trading card game, and it's like an MMO trading card game. It made over $1 million. They've also made a lot of other games that are based on popular franchises. Like they made the Walking Dead card game, and they made – the Batman Arkham City game. They're a board game purveyor, and they saw all of this happening, and so they decided to step up to the plate, and they're going to print the game. They're not only going to print the game, The Doom That Came to Atlantic City, giving these designers an opportunity for their game to actually hit the table like they were promised, but they're also going to give that game to everybody who backed the game at the level where they would receive a game. They're doing this at their own cost. Cryptozoic is stepping up and giving games away to these people, even though they have no stake in the game.
Mm.
Like, I think that that is amazing. Like, that kind of charity is an amazing, amazing thing that's happening in the board game world right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously all good press for Cryptozoic, but it's also going to come at a pretty substantial cost to them as well. But they basically said, you know, we got this. We have the infrastructure in place to produce this game, and we're also going to make the effort to not only sell this game to people, but we're also going to give the game away to everybody who backed at the level, even though we received no money for that. It's completely on our end.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and with that, Cryptozoic became one of my favorite game companies.
Yeah, that's a power move.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Huge.
Until, you know, flash forward 8 months, and they're like, sorry, guys, we're actually bankrupt now.
We don't have any money.
We don't have anybody. That was us basically throwing the cards on the table and seeing what sticked.
Yeah. And, you know, even with that happening, I'm going to give this game a chance. I mean, it is a Monopoly port, but I doubt that it's roll and move. It's basically, I think what they tried to do is take a game that you could play on a Monopoly board and make it a fun experience. So I'll check it out, man. And I just think Cryptozoic is awesome for doing this.
Yeah, that's cool, but it's going to take a lot for me to play a game on a Monopoly board.
Even if it's not roll and move?
Yeah, I'm going to have to be pretty solidly convinced that's a good game.
Huh. All right, well, they also have some other games out there. They got the DC deck building game. They got, of course, once again, the Walking Dead game. They have the Hobbit and Unexpected Journey board game. They do some stuff. They get around. Cryptozoic Entertainment, guys. Check them out and support them if you can, because this is a company that's taking this thing. They decided, you know, they made over $1 million in Kickstarter. I'm sure that there was a part of this that was like, we don't want to see Kickstarter fail because of this great fuck-up by this company.
Right.
So we're gonna step in and we're going to do something about it.
I kind of don't think it would sink Kickstarter, though.
No, but I think it might. You never know. You never
it could
know.
Be a black stain, but
yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it would fail their company.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting thing, and once again, fuck you, Forking Path. You really screwed the pooch.
It kind of lived up to their name, though.
They did.
What really do you expect?
What
not
do you
a
expect?
Restaurant.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. Guys, Ball Noom Network. Guys, Breaking Bad final season's coming up very soon. You kickstarted it. You loved it. It's coming up very soon, and the guys are getting so stoked because they are champing at the bit to get back on that podcasting microphone. So that's coming up soon. Of course, we got the Because Show. Of course, we got Up Yours Downstairs, and we got Personal Arrogance all on BaldMove.com. Check out Bald Move. And then please get in touch with us here. We are on Facebook. We have the Bald Move Facebook. We have the Personal Arrogance Facebook. We will be posting, once again, the Fantasy Football link Friday, noon Pacific time, on the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. Go there, sign up, get one of those 14 slots, and play with us all season. It will be very fun. You can also write us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can send us a call and leave us a voicemail at 360-362-0024. You can follow us on Twitter at Personal Podcast. And you can always rate and review us on iTunes. We love it when you do that. But, of course, if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it, because friend-to-friend is the most friendliest thing you can friendly do.
We need rate and reviews on iTunes. So if you haven't done that, you owe us. Do that. Five-star review.
Five-star. Okay, and that's that. So let's get to the Facebook Roundup. Each week, we post a post on our Facebook page asking what you want us to talk about on this week's show. We got a ton of responses this week, but it is great. First of all, Mitchell Netzer's having a baby.
Congratulations.
Having a baby.
Very exciting, man. Nothing. Once you get on the other side of that fence, prepare for an entirely new world. Nothing changes your life like having a baby.
A whole new world. That's what that Aladdin song was about.
I think so. I'm pretty sure she got knocked up on that magic carpet ride.
He wants some geeky nursery ideas.
Tasha did a really cool she like sewed a bunch of like Northwest forest animals, like raccoons and like bears and moose and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's geeky. I guess you could do like a cool mobile of like the Battle of Yavin 4.
Oh, absolutely. Get some. Yeah, there's also the Star Wars action figure bath set that you got that I got really jealous of. It was like chewable bath toys for...
Chewable.
Well, that's really what they are, right? They're so kids can chew them, like, but they can't swallow
plastic,
them, right?
Like yeah. Any bath toy.
It's a chewable toy.
It wasn't hard ceramic bath toys.
It's a chewable toy of like Boba Fett and Darth Vader and Yoda, and you can just...
Yeah.
And it's bath time.
I think there's 10 of them. It was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I'm just bummed out that they had a clone trooper instead of a stormtrooper, and they had a lightsaber in Yoda's hand.
Well, you can't completely escape the prequels, and those are the movies that Russell Nisha will actually love.
No, she will not.
All right, Dennis Kleinbeck says, the new animated Star Wars show Rebels, which was revealed at Celebration Europe, some artwork currently online, and it appears that the showrunners of Clone Wars are involved, which is a good thing, I guess. By the way, the Star Wars Celebration Europe was a blast. Dennis, you went to Star Wars Celebration, you didn't even like leave us a voicemail about it?
Yeah, what the hell, man?
I want to go so bad.
Yeah, that's really cool. I just want to say that when John O'Brien calls in, for a second, I don't know if it's him or Dennis.
Really?
Yeah. It's like Boston, Berlin, same thing.
Well, you know, John F. Kennedy, Ich bin Berliner.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Sam Golhamadi says, hey, guys, with it being barbecue season, I want to know what food you look forward to most in the summer. I like barbecue marinated chicken with a bun and coleslaw. I love...
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I love barbecue with the coleslaw in the bun. So it's you use coleslaw as a condiment.
Yeah, I think that's how he's doing it.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure. The other thing, you know, I'm just a big sausage fan.
Yeah,
give
I know
me
you
a sausage
are.
Fest in my barbecue, and I'm happy.
I'm a steaks and burgers guy. I love cooking yep. steaks. Burgers.
We're gonna do some steak fajitas tomorrow night. Barbecue steak fajitas.
Great. That will be delicious for you.
Yeah, Doug.
I'm looking forward to Aaron's.
Oh yeah,
world famous pulled pork. Man, yeah. That guy can pull a pork like nobody's business.
I don't think that's technically barbecue though. That's like crock pot.
It's crock pot, but there's barbecue sauce.
That's true.
Actually, I don't think he uses barbecue sauce. He's just that good.
John O'Brien.
He doesn't rely on the crutch of barbecue sauce.
John O'Brien says someone ran the numbers on the destruction of Man of Steel. At least 129,000 citizens of Metropolis were killed, along with another 1 million injured and 250,000 missing. Those numbers are on the same level as the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Over $2 trillion in damage to the structures as well. Yeah, you know, this is the problem that most people... Zack Snyder probably should have left that out of the movie. I feel like if he would have left that huge destruction out of the movie, that it would have really eased the fears of these of the nerds a lot. But the thing is, that much destruction, it totally opens up a campaign against Superman led by Lex Luthor, who may be the new mayor of Metropolis, and also a dude named Batman who hates killing.
Yeah, that's a classic superhero trope, like right. the anti superhero legislation because of their collateral damage, that kind of thing.
Priscilla Torres, she says, have you seen any of the Netflix original series Orange is the New Black, Hemlock Grove, Arrested Development, or House of Cards? I've seen Orange is the New Black, I've seen Arrested Development, I've seen House of Cards. I like them all. Arrested Development was what it was. House of Cards I really enjoyed a lot, but Orange is the New Black, dude, that show fucking rules. It ends, the season finale is so good, and Lydia and I binge watched it in about a week. So
yeah, I was getting into it with the Bald Move guys over this. I don't like it.
I like it.
I like it okay. I'll watch an episode, but I find it kind of boring. I think the episodes are too long. Hmm. I think the characters are kind of one-dimensional. Very relatable.
I feel like these are some of the most complex female characters that have been in the same series in like any show. Like the thing that the criticism I heard about is that the male characters are very shallow and one-dimensional, while the female characters are much more complex.
I find all the characters to be very shallow.
Interesting.
Too long. I'll watch it. Like my wife and I have been watching it, but like I have to be doing something else at the same time, or I get bored.
Yeah, let's just.
I think it's too fucking long, man. It shouldn't be a real hour. They should be 22 minutes. There's a ton of fat that could be trimmed.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I binge watched the hell out of it. I loved it. Priscilla Torres says, also, how is a Song of Ice and Fire series? I threw the book number 3 across the room and haven't picked it up since. Broke my heart. It's collecting lots of dust. How are you faring?
I'm 5/8 of the way through a Game of Thrones, so I'm still just in the very beginning. I've actually been exposed through the popular culture to a lot of spoilers, so I know what's store for a lot of these characters. So for good or for bad, I'm not forming emotional attachments to anyone. But still, I mean, I was talking to Tasha. I was like, I don't know if I can handle another one of these books. I don't know if I have the emotional fortitude because, like, fuck, man. Like, the first 400 pages are basically the Starks getting their pants pulled down and spanked hard. And it sucks because they're, like, nice people.
Yeah, well.
And then it's just, like, the shitty Lannisters, you know, winning all the battles, so to speak. And then Tyrion doing his own thing, which is why you got to root for the Lannisters, you got to root for the bad guys, and you got to root for the ducks.
Sounds like a good show. All right, Levi Reakin says, have you guys heard about the Back to the Future Lego set coming out tomorrow? I know you guys aren't big Lego fans, but I know how much Eric loves him some Back to the Future. It's not the greatest representation of a DeLorean, but the set comes with Marty and Doc minifigures, plus instructions to build all the versions of the DeLorean, and an out-of-time California license plate. Jesse's actually a big Lego fan.
Yeah, I love Legos. The first thing I did when I found out I was going to be a dad was I went and bought some Legos, which was a little early.
Yeah.
Might have been for me as much as for my unborn child. But, yeah, I'm a huge Lego fan. I took a look at this. The DeLorean's a little funky.
Mm-hmm.
The best part of the set is, like, they have, like, the plates for, yeah, like, the console.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, the years, and it's, like, 88, plus, you know, capacitor, miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And the cool license plate. And the Marty McFly figure is awesome.
Yeah, I actually bought today, because it was on clearance in the Mariner store, the Ichiro Lego minifigure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Eduardo Salasmata says, yeah, Jesse, I wanted to know why you hate Kevin Smith, and what would you guys do in a zombie apocalypse?
I just think I don't like his movies that much. I think he's overrated.
Yeah, I don't think his movies are as good as his podcast. And really, when I say podcast, I mean Fat Man on Batman, because I love Fat Man on Batman, but I can't really listen to any of his other stuff.
He's kind of whiny. I don't know. I don't like him.
Well, he's just a rambler. He's a rambler.
Yeah, he's a rambling man. He's got that kind of like stoner, talk too much kind of thing.
He's a guy who smokes weed and then just starts talking forever.
Yeah, I get enough of that at work.
And then we have Jay Salerno.
Oh,
says,
no, we did. Zombie apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going into the Olympic National Forest. I think I could actually survive there.
Yeah, get some elk.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're fair game now because the government is pretty much done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the goats? There's wild.
You gotta watch out for those mountain goats though, because they will kill you.
I know they're pretty brutal, but I think they kill you when you think that they're harmless.
If you are wary of them, they will not.
Well,
they smell your fear,
and
they're
smart enough to not get killed by one. Yeah. But that's what I'm doing in a zombie apocalypse.
They could smell your fear, and they're afraid of it. Jay Salerno says, sperm whale aside, and this is not sperm whale OSOCIDE, it is sperm whale ASIDE, which I'm assuming is an aside about sperm whales.
Oh, yeah.
My team is named.
I don't really have anything off the top of my head.
My fantasy football team is named after sperm whales. Check the Facebook page noon on Friday. Finally, Corey Kershaw posted a link to Card Hunter, which looks like a pretty cool game. So check it out. Search for Card Hunter and get it up. Jesse, what is your first recommendation this week?
Okay, so I think I've recommended it before, but I got my PC going again. I've been playing games off of Steam. I got Civ 5, Gods and Kings.
Oh, yeah.
And freaking loving it. I forgot how much I love Civ. Really enjoying playing this. And if there were a bunch of like Civ players that were fans, it would be fun to do a little multiplayer.
Maybe a little bit of multiplayer. All right.
Just saying.
My first rec is it's on Netflix right now. It's technically a stand-up, but it's more just like Marvel and this guy's genius. Reggie Watts, Why Shit So Crazy.
Seattle's Own.
It is so, so great. It's like just like a great experience. Reggie Watts is like right on my level of humor.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, he plays off of like the greats of old, but he this is like good, like random but hilarious stuff. Stream of consciousness, beautiful with beatboxing. Reggie Watts, you're my hero. Watch his stand up, it's great. Reggie Watts, Why Shit So Crazy on Netflix.
So my second reco is a little thing called goat cheese. Speaking of mountain goats.
Yep.
Dude, I got some Kirkland Signature goat cheese. Put that on my hamburger.
Straight
delicious.
From yeah.
I made a hamburger today. Burger, onion, goat cheese, pesto, bun.
What?
Done. Delish.
What?
Yeah, put that pesto on that hamburger. You won't regret it.
Do it. All right. And then my psycho this week is once again, guys, Friday, noon, on our Facebook page, link to the Fantasy Football League. There's 14 spots. Pick up one of them. Play with us all season. It's going to be really fun. Aaron, Jim, Eric, Jesse, we're all here. Beat us in fantasy
football. Can't believe
Jim's
playing.
Yeah, I love his team name is Anything But Last.
That's a good attitude. He doesn't know dick about football.
This might be another word that we need to come up with, is somebody who plays fantasy sports only for the draft and then doesn't manage their team afterward.
Mm, a draft dodger.
There you go. All right, guys, that's enough for this week. But until next time, remember that wherever you go,
whatever you do,
please stay arrogant.
Thank you.